Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 6, delivered on February 6, 2019. The title of this lecture is Financial Analysis.
Today, Financial Analysis. And it begins with, and this is all math, but it's not really hard math. It's just calculations. And it's actually the kinds of calculations that excel. Here's an interesting thing. The reason I would call it Excel, this is Excel, is because it excels at things like this. Back before there were these kinds of nice computers, we did all of this by hand. And before we had calculators, we did it with slide rules or with paper and pencil. But as you can see, there is a huge amount of information here. And a lot of this is not going to be of much interest to us. We'll try to stay as close as we can to just the primaries, the income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flows, statement of retained earnings. I'm missing one. Oh, and the notes to the financial statement. However, to begin, before I do anything else, as I said, profit is irrelevant to us. It really is. What we care about is cash flow. You could be a very rich guy, but you have no money, which means that you can't eat. You have bars of gold, you have stocks, you have bonds, you have a great house, but you have no money in your pocket to buy anything. You know what that means? You will die rich very quickly. And that's one of the problems with net income, is it doesn't tell us what's really going on. What we want to know is how much money is flowing through a company at any given time. Hell, you can have companies that are actually losing money, and they have positive cash flow. And so when you say, well, I wouldn't invest in that because that company's got negative profit, negative net income, well, that might not be really a problem. In fact, oftentimes, think about it this way. Madam, are you an accounting major? I thought so. Just that look, happy, satisfied look that you'll have a job when you graduate, as opposed to the rest of us. Here's the thing. A company that loses money for, let's say, it's in serious trouble. It's lost money, lost money, lost money over a period of years. Now, it is going to realize tax losses, losses that can be recognized against income. But since the company doesn't have any income, it can't use those, right? If its income sucks, then all those negative, those tax loss carryforwards can't do it any good. And so the company is nearing death, nearing bankruptcy. Does that mean that the company's value is approaching zero? No, because that company is very attractive to a buyer, that it has positive net income. Because if I can eat that company that has all those negative tax loss carryforwards, I get those, and I can apply those to my positive pre-tax income. So that company that looks like it's near death actually might be a quite valuable company. So that's just one thing. Let's go here. Cash flow. And I'm going to call this free cash flow. Free cash flow. FCF. Pre-cash flow. And I'm going to write this one way first, but but you don't need to do it this way. There's an important reason for writing it this way. Would be revenues minus costs minus depreciation. Now, remember I cautioned you that oftentimes in financial statements these days, the depreciation is just tucked away into the other costs on the income statement, so you don't see it directly. And then minus your interest expense. This is called leverage free cash flow. And then we take that times 1 minus the marginal tax rate of the corporation. That gives us what on financial statements that are accounting based would be called net income. So on a quick, dirty approach, I don't need to do this mess right here. I can just look at net income on the accounting income statement. I don't need to do these components, bam, 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 bam. I don't need to do that. There it is at the bottom of the statement. And in this case, statement of operation. There it is. That line right there, okay? That's net income. It's taking out all, it's taking the revenue, minus the cost, minus the depreciation, minus the tax, interest expense on debt that they have, and it's gotten it, and then it's subtracted out the taxes. So as a first pass, and this is a dirty pass, and it's not good enough to do real serious free cash flow analysis, but there we are right there. Okay, so right off the bat, we see that Tesla, as of the end of fiscal calendar year 2017, had lost for the year $2.24 billion. Now, that's pretty bloody, right in and of itself. That is a lot of money. Have you ever seen $2.2 billion? Yeah, 2.4. You haven't. Have you ever lost that much money, you know, walking down the street? Have you ever had a bill come in, you must pay us within 48 hours, $2.4 billion? You never had that happen? That's what happened with Tesla, right off the bat. Well, we'll have a turnaround year next year. Okay, you've already gone off a cliff. You're halfway down. Hey, the steering wheel works. That's what it means when you say, well, there's a turnaround year coming on Tesla. Okay, good for you. Turn that wheel, yeah. Well, you're still going to go down. Well, yeah, but the tires are going to make it kind of go like that. Okay, you ever jumped off a cliff with an umbrella? Doesn't do anything. Okay. So we can see that this company is actually in severe trouble to begin with. But for free cash flow, we've got to do something. Do a couple of things. We've got to fix a couple of things. The first thing that we have to fix is we have to add back the depreciation expense because that didn't really happen. That was just a number that we put down as a piece of what we spent in capital, on capital goods.
Okay.
We can do that. Problem is that if I look here, now tell me if I'm not seeing it. Do you see the depreciation expense anywhere in here? I don't. We'll have to go over here. Statement of cash flows. Oh, here it is. There it is right there. So they depreciated out 1.636. Oh, I better put this down. I apologize here. 2.241. That's their negative on the first. And then I can go back here and find that statement of cash flows. There it is. So now I can add back 1.636 billion dollars. Well, that helps. But then we have to take out what really happened. That would be the capital expenditures, what they actually spent. Depreciation just took a little piece of that. Now we have to put back the capital expenditures. So this means that we have to go clear down here somewhere on the statement of cash flows. Come on. Purchases. We usually just grab this number. That's a good statement of what they actually physically spent, which would be negative $3.415 billion. And now finally the last part, which is what I was showing you last time, the change in net working capital. So in the case of Tesla, let's have a look. 2017 versus 2016. And you can do this however you want. This is how I do it. Current assets, current liabilities, NWC. So I need to go back to the balance sheet now. Notice how this is where you're getting to the point where you've got to kind of move around. Okay, current assets, 6.571 against 2016 on current assets, 6.260, and on current liabilities. And you might really want to check these just in your time when you're reading your notes, just to see what's going on. 7.675 against 5.827. And now pulling up a calculator to just quickly hammer those out. 6.571 less 7.675. So their net working capital 2017 was negative $1.104 billion. Their net working capital year previous would be 7 current liabilities, right there, 7.675. Wait, that's not true. 6.260, I'm clear. 6.260 minus 5.827 would be 0.433. And so the change in net working capital is this number minus this number. Is that right? Yeah. So we would have Bosnag minus 1.104, negative 1.537. Now that's a negative. Oh, I'm sorry, that's supposed to be a minus. Correct that in your notes. That's a minus, not a plus. So that's minus negative 1.537. Now we can take a stab at free cash flow. Here we go. 2.241 Posneg plus 1.636 minus 3.415 minus negative is plus 1.537. Here's our free cash flow. 2.483. $1 billion. That's the number that matters. This is a company that is bleeding in 2017, bled out almost $2.5 billion. That's the number that matters. Now, sometimes you'll have a company, like I said, that has negative net income, but it actually has positive free cash flow. That can happen. On the other hand, you can also have a company that has positive net income that has negative free cash flow. That can happen. Well, now you have one here that has negative net income and has even worse free cash flow. Now, you don't have enough money for your bills. You don't have enough money to pay. You obviously have a landscaping service. You also have a pet groomer. You also have, you know, personal assistants to take care of the home. And you also have your usual expenses that you have to pay, like, you know, your catered meals every night and your once every week parties, soirees, and all of that. But you don't have any money to pay that. So do you quit paying your bills? Do you stop living your wild and crazy lifestyle? No, you should, but you're not. You're not that kind of person. You know, you're a free thinker. How do you do it? How would a company keep going that's in this situation? How would a company possibly keep going if it doesn't have $2.5 billion that it needs to pay its bills? How would it do it? Yeah. Well, Elon Musk, yeah. Is he, okay, are you going to, let me ask you this. You are the big wig of a big wig company. Are you going to use your own money to save that company? No, no. I mean, well, let me tell you something. That's kind of an interesting thing because, you see, he actually probably doesn't. That's because he smokes pot. But his investors, the stockholders and the lenders, care very, very much that he'll come through. That is the interesting thing, is when an owner thinks his ego is all that matters in a company. Because a guy like that can keep going for years, hell, for decades, leaving wreckage in his path. Sooner or later, it'll catch up with him. Sooner or later. But not in the short run. Yeah, Musk is quite happy to become, I don't care if it fails. All I care about is my legacy living on and my ashes being scattered among the stars and all that kind of stuff. But his investors do. How do you do it? How do you keep going when you don't have the money to keep going? What do? Is there anything you can do?
Issue stock.
Or you can sell more stock, or?
Sell, borrow money.
Borrow. Yeah, you just sell more stock, you borrow more, you issue more debt. You can do it. You can do it for a long, long time. You can just keep this up. In matter of fact, okay, I borrowed money, now it's due. So what do you do when you borrow money and it's due and you don't have the money to pay it back? What do? Yeah, you do what our government does. You borrow more money, for God's sake. And it's perfectly okay to do this in a capitalist system. That's why they call it capitalism, is because it's all driven by capital. Long-term money, wherever it comes from, you can do it. And especially remember what I said, OPM, not your money, other people's money. So this company just keeps on keeping on. It just keeps rolling along. And you'll find, actually, there are some. I probably shouldn't have used Tesla, except that I enjoy using that one, just to show that brilliant technologies don't always leave the people who invest in them in great situations. In a lot of cases, it's an utter disaster for the investors in a company. And this one might survive. But at the same time, it's not going to be for you, because you, madam, will invest in this company, and you'll lose everything. Are you going to be enshrined in history books, in the dreams of future business students, as a great and interesting and wonderful entrepreneur? No. You are essentially the carbon deposits that get spit out of the engine of his dreams that made him famous. That's the reality of it. Don't be suckers. We have plenty of those. And if you are, I'll be happy to find you and help you, give up some of your money to me and some friends of mine. Okay, now, a mother's work is never done. The next part of this, and this is how we break companies down. This is how we look at companies. We don't want anything to do. We want to stay miles away from the media and the hype and the pop culture that tells us who's good, who's not good, what company to invest in. Show us numbers, and then let us use our sense. Thank God you've got the greatest professor of finance that's ever walked the earth to help you do that. And remember, as I use some accounting numbers here, I really want to avoid giving you the impression that that's the best we can do. We oftentimes have to ask, what's missing in these numbers? And finally, at the end of the day, no matter how many numbers you crunch, no matter how great you are. Now, madam, you said you're an accounting major, right? That means you have mad math skills, right? You're being silent. Most accounting people have very good math skills. Most finance people have good math skills. And of course, then again, so that Rain Man had great math skills too, but what I'm trying to get to here is that the numbers can't tell you the entire story. You have the armchair quarterbacks, the analysts that sit at their computers. I got my little computer. I can learn everything about the universe this way. I play Call of Duty, so I know how to fight in combat, that kind of thing. I play stock market games on MarketWatch, and I'm a genius. My God, look at my portfolio. That's not the real world. At the end of the day, and this was something I did when I was in several corporations as a consultant, when they would start showing me their spreadsheets, I said, did you go out and look at these companies? Well, we haven't really done that. We're here in the office. Get off your fat asses and go out there and look at the company. Talk to the employees. Look at the buildings. Look at what their history is with their suppliers. Ask their suppliers, what do you think of this company? Ask the consumers, what do you think of this company? At the end of the day, the numbers can take you only so far. Then you have to just get out there and do the legwork to find out for yourself. And I've mentioned this before. You got a retail company. Go to the company stores. Look at the shelves. Are the shelves clean? Have good stock? Have lots of stuff on the shelves? Look at the employees. Are the employees motivated? Do they look happy? Or are they miserable and walking around like zombies? And don't let the company's policies play games with you. They've got all these companies now. Tell their employees, say hi to your customers. You know, have you noticed that? You walk around a store and some random stranger, hi, how are you doing today? You get away from me, you perv. You know, seriously. And at the restaurant, what are we having for dinner tonight? We, are you eating with me? Lady, no, I'm not paying for your meal. Quit it. Get away. They try to incorporate you in. They tell the employees to look this way. And when I see that, I begin to ask, why are you so worried about how your employees come off to the customers? Ask questions. Be cynical. You're going to lose a lot more money being too optimistic than you are being too cynical. Boy, that cookie's good. No, let me show you this. When I do financial analysis, I have to have a cookie. Do you remember that? Put that in your notes. It's very important. It helps you think. Let me show you something. Where the hell did I put it? Oh, there it is. I'm going to open this. This is on ReggieNet in the Resources tab. These are financial ratios. This is kind of the core. I've thrown in one or two that aren't in the book that are old school that we used to use. But literally, there are hundreds of financial ratios you could calculate. Realistically, you don't even have to do this because services like Standard & Poor's Net Advantage, which you can access as long as you're a student here at ISU. You ask for the ratios on a company, and it'll just dump all of these. It'll just go rah, right into your face. Let me show you. Now, what I'm going to do is I don't think I want to see any more of the sadness of, let me get rid of Tesla. It's just scary. Let me find something that won't be quite so bad. Stick to retail. Anything retail. Walmart's awfully big. That can kind of knock you over. Retail company. Anything. Target. Okay. Well, man, you're educated. Target. Okay. Upper class people go to Target. Best Buy would actually be a good one, too, though. Huh? No, lower class people like me pronounce a Beast Buy. Let's go over to Beast Buy. Where's that? Best Buy to you. If you ever bought one of their crappy computers, the computer companies unload on them. The ones with the failing hard drive, failing chipsets and all of that, like the Asus. Or the failing motherboards like the HPs.
That's right. Yeah, you sold me, suckered me twice with cheapo deals at Best Buy. You dumped them on them, and then I got caught with them. Pisses me off. Anyway.
Just a real quick check here before I go too far. Make sure that Target is actually... Okay, there's their balance sheet. Total assets, just very quickly now, very quickly. Before you attack, just take a walk through and do what we used to call in the service, do some recon before you go charging in. Just have a look at the landscape, see what's there, get some first impressions. Here, let me turn this down. Much better. Now, just a quick quick look here at their total assets. What do you see, ma'am? What do you see total assets from fiscal year previous to the current fiscal? Yes, it did. So that's a good sign. Was it a dramatic increase?
Not really.
You're right about you're right there. That it wasn't, you know, just a whoa, that was a hot dog. Now, the first formula. Now, I'm not doing the formulas yet. I want to do a look of the landscape. But we, as I told you before, do not care a darn bit about absolute changes. In this case, the absolute change was about $1.5 billion. Are those in billions? That company's that big? It's in millions? So are you, okay, so that is $38 billion. Am I right? Geez, that's a big company. Who knew? No, seriously, it's bad when you're as old as I am, and you can look at these companies. I remember when this was two stores that were barely making it from one month to the next. And then you see these, holy cow, sort of like you guys. I'm going to see you in 30, 40 years. You will look so different then. You know, and I'll tell you, you look great, but I probably will be lying. Okay. Okay, the percent change is year to year. This is an annual thing. End minus beginning over the beginning. Now, this would be a 1 year. If you've got a 2 year, you have to take it to the 1/2 power. You'd have to do end over beginning to the 1/2 power minus 1. But we're just using annual, so I don't have to show you that yet. I will later. But just to end, so in a case like this, I'm not going to do the numbers, but I can see that if I took $39 billion minus $37.5 billion, that's about $1.5 billion divided by a base of $37.5 billion. That's not too spectacular. That's about 4%, something like that. That's okay, though. Now, just looking down a little bit, you notice that it looks to me like they had a little buyback of stock there. See how it went down a little bit? Additional paid-in capital. No, they didn't. Well, I'm not sure what that means. That's kind of an oddball thing. Shareholder equity did increase. Liabilities. Actually, it looks to me like they didn't borrow too much money this year, through 2017. They didn't do a lot of borrowing. See how that long-term debt, it went up a little bit, but not anything like you would see with a company that was desperately trying to get money. And I see from these two together that their revenues obviously supported net income going up a fairly decent amount. And I'm just looking. I'm not attacking the calculator. I really want to grab the calculator. Let's have a look here at the numbers. But I want to do a quick little survey. Now, the next thing, consolidated statement of income. Really? Is there some reason this sucks? Did I miss it? Where is the income statement? There, ha! I knew I'd find it somewhere in here. But okay, very quickly. Well, that's the cash flow. Really? Where the hell? Oh, that area. My color is meatloaf, duh. Would someone mind telling me where the income statement is? See, I'm doing it just to show you how difficult it can be to... Oh, there it is. You meatheads, can't you... Do you have no one in that whole company that knows how to resize columns in Excel? There. Oh, God, it's hot in this room. That way, yeah, finance professor can't find the income statement. Okay. Now, having a look here, do you notice something kind of odd about the sales? Do you see something kind of curious? And again, don't attack the calculator. Look at the numbers. Numbers are just words written in a stupid way. Madam, is there something you see about that, their sales, that looks strange? Let me ask you this. On January 30, 2016, which would have been 2015, pretty much, how much did they make that year in revenue that went into the cash drawer? What do you see?
It
sales
at
73.8. Now, 1 year later, what were their sales?
69.5.
Is that a good thing? Here's a rule. You don't want your sales to go down. And then in this just previous year, what did they do? To what? 71.9. So did it recover from what happened in 2016? Not completely. So in other words, something slapped this company down. Their sales took a hit, and then they recovered, but they didn't recover completely. They didn't recover back to their pre-down level. It looks like they're on their way, and we'll have to see what happens with these financials that are coming out very soon for this company. I was buying there. It's not my fault, man. You know, seriously, I bought a very tasteful lampshade there, and I bought some cat food there. Bought a lot of cat food there. You can get it cheaper at Walmart, but I just hate Walmart. You know, that they have greeters that are really odd people. Anyway, and it makes me sad when I see my former students still working there. Wasn't it like 8 years ago you graduated? Yeah, man. What'd you major in? Marketing. No, but it's really scary. I can't really go to that Walmart because there are a couple of former students who chase me around. Do you know where there's a job? Yeah, you've got one. Work with it, boy. One of them is a finance major, which is really weird. Okay, here we go. So that kind of bothers me. Now, just coming down here to my net earnings, you notice, interestingly enough, that the net earnings for this company followed the path of the sales. They did strong $3.4 billion. Then they got really hauled down. I mean, that's a real hit. That's $500 million net income drop. And then they've come back to 2.9. So that's good, but they still haven't recovered to their 2016 level. And the question you are asking is actually very good. What in the heck happened here? Well, I got one thing that I'll tell you. There were costs that they incurred, which they were criticized for getting those costs, taking on those costs, that hurt them somewhat. But that doesn't explain why their sales went down. That would explain why net income went down. That wouldn't explain why sales went down. Anyway, enough of that. Now we can talk. And just as a quick thing here, going back to the balance sheet. Come on. Does it really suck that way? Okay. Their cash position is pretty stable. So is their inventory. Do you see that sense of stability? It's not dramatic growth of this company, but there is a sense of control in this environment. Something that I want to do real quick here. Finance. I'm going to call up TGT and show you something. Look at the beta. The beta is pointing to what? A safe stock or a risky stock? Ma'am? Yeah, don't say question. Never put a question mark on a statement. Safe, man, don't you know that? You're supposed to be a professor. You say it that way. It's safe. Be assertive. You know, slap me. No, don't. No. I don't have any money to pay you. 0.85. Do you see that stability? That, in other words, this is not a dramatic, dynamic, wow company. This is a responsible, more mature company. This is the kind of company that doesn't do insane, crazy things. It's not going to be in the news all the time with the guy who runs it getting in trouble with the SEC, talking about he's going to move to Mars, which we can always hope, and all that. This is a company where you don't know the people. The personalities are not running the company. The company is running as a unit. And that's something that is oftentimes associated with more stable companies, more responsible companies, is there's not Elon Musk. There is people, I don't even know their names. And that's what you really want in a company. A corporation is an entity of its own. It's not its owner or its major shareholder. So you see that there, right? That stability and these financial statements are speaking to that stability. There's nothing dramatic going on around here at all in this company. Cash is fairly controlled, inventory, modest growth of inventory and all of that kind of stuff. And this is what we want to look at in the ratios as we go forward, is to say, all right, you know, what are these ratios actually doing for us? What are we looking at? Okay, gross margin. Now, as I told you before, working my way back here, if I can find the income statement again. There. Oh, look at this. Interestingly, this company actually gives us its gross margin, which is a nice thing. Now, a little bit of this. I want you on Monday, if you have a laptop, this is when you're definitely permitted to have it, open it up. You're going to learn how to do some Excel skills. The kind that make it so that when you say, I can do Excel, you actually can do some pretty cool things. I'm going to do some of this right now and then come back through it and show you these again. The first thing, okay, here's what, you know, my people, my connections and my friends and my former students out there in the real world say, here are the Excel skill sets we really want people to be able to do. We want them to do macros and pivot tables. We want them to be able to go out and capture data on the web, either on public networks or on virtual private networks, and be able to pull it in and use it in Excel, and possibly in real time so that whenever you open up the sheet, it goes and grabs that data again and updates any formulas. And then another thing that they want is for you, a lot of them want you to be able to do a dashboard, which is what I'm going to show you, a little tiny bit of a dashboard today. Dashboards are essentially a front face. Let's try this. Sir, may I see your guts, your lungs? You see, here's the problem. I can't. You know why? Because they're ugly. We all are. You said, ew. Okay, that's why I can't understand doctors. How do they keep from barfing? But that's just me. I wasn't a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I just play one in the classroom. Now, the thing, though, is that we cover up the machine itself. Cars, electronics, ourselves, even animals, they cover the machinery. And that's what you want to do when you use Excel in a company, especially if you have end users. You don't want them to see all of this, the data tabs. You don't want to even have them really see much of the calculation machine itself. Ideally, you want a nice, pretty front face, a front tab that shows the results of the calculations that are going on in the background, that shows the results of the masses of data. And another thing, too, is, and you'll find this out as you get out there, you want that front sheet to be printable so that you can print that out and it's really nice looking to hand out at a meeting. And you don't have to show the guts behind it. You also want that front sheet to be untouchable. In other words, you do not want some end user to go in there and play with your formulas. So you want to lock those sheets and lock your formula cells so that no imbecile can touch them. Love the story. I can never remember what I've told you and what I've not. There's a company here in town. It's a very large company, not very well known, but it's a big, heavy duty in its industry. They had these Excel spreadsheets that have been built over a period of years. And that's one of the things you're going to face is when you start opening these spreadsheets and these coming, what in the hell is this thing? It's going to freak you out. And it's not some genius did this. It's just that it's been building and building and building over time. And for some reason, no one had ever locked this one massive spreadsheet that had close to 50 tabs. They'd never thought to. They hired some guy who claimed that he was brilliant in Excel. He managed to convince them with some phony reference letters and stuff like that. And it was a mistake that they acknowledged in lessons learned. This was a big mistake. Well, he opened up that spreadsheet and he decided, well, there's easier ways to do this. Let me tweak this. Let me tweak that. And by the time he was finished, the whole sheet was crashing with wrong and circular arguments. And then you know what he did? He saved it. And no one opened up that sheet during the time when the next archiving happened. So the backup was his sheet. So they fired him right on the spot when they found it. And fortunately, they had a backup of the backup. But that backup was like a couple of months old, so they had to take the backup of the backup and rebuild everything that should have been done over several months. And this is a sheet that's active a couple of times a week. So lock your sheets so that fools and idiots can't touch the core that you've written from one time to the next. Now, the dashboard. And what I do is I just insert a worksheet. And I usually just call it dashboard. Now this should be a white sheet. It shouldn't be colored. It can have grays and shades in it. But this is essentially, and at the end you can do this, I'll show you right now. This doesn't, you're starting to make it so that it doesn't look like a spreadsheet. So that when end users pull this up, or some lower level employee pulls it up to get some numbers, they see something that doesn't look necessarily like an intimidating Excel spreadsheet. It just looks like it's got some information on it. Now I'm going to back that up because I need to see the cells to get some of the things done. You put a header row. The stylistics that you do on it, you do at the end. Don't be making things pretty along the way. You have plenty of time to insert columns and all that kind of stuff. So to begin this process, what we would want to do is first of all go over here. Okay, gross margin. So I'll put just a header on this. And then here, what I'm going to do is, well, let's see that formula. Well, the gross margin, oh, I should probably put this into, I do apologize for that. And then I just go over here, okay, so that gross margin, they said, was gross profit over sales. Okay, we can do that. Okay, equals, and now we find where that stupid operation is gross. Now notice that they use the wrong word there. They use gross margin. That's the ratio. This is actually gross income, what they're saying here, but that's okay. I'm just grateful I didn't have to put it in there. Okay, equals that divided by that, and up it comes. And then, since they're together on the sheet that I got it from, I can just do that, and I got both years. You can stream out as many years. You shouldn't be writing the same formula more than once in this. You following me on this? These are little tiny skills, but you put these together, and you get the power that is a true Excel person over a period of time. Now, let's have a look at another one, okay? We'll do the analysis later. But operating margin is EBIT over sales. So back we go, operating margin. And that one would be equal to earnings before interest and taxes. That one is that line. Remember I warned you that they have different names. This is earnings from continuing. No. Earnings from before interest and income taxes. Okay, it's equal to that divided by that. And, well, that's sucks.com. Did you see that one? 6% operating margin? Okay, net margin. Net margin is your net income. Equals, and then you go down through here. Net earnings, that, divided by sales. And we'll stop for these to talk about them. These are called your profitability ratios. And the numbers are wonderful, but if you don't know what you're saying, in this case, just talk about net margin. For every dollar of sales in 2017, 4 cents of that, 4 pennies, belong to the shareholders. That's what it's saying. For every dollar of sales, 4 pennies belong to the shareholders. Now, is that good? Is that bad? You can't say. A couple of things are going to drive this. One is you have to think about the industry average. What's normal in Target's industry under its SIC code, standard industry classification code? Now, you can go to Standard & Poor's Net Advantage, and you can ask, you can say, all right, what's Target's industry? Show me the ratios that are the averages in that industry. Now, if the averages in that industry are above Target's, that's what I like. So, for example, if I looked at the industry average for net margin for Target's industry, and I saw that it was 6 cents per share, I'd be a little concerned. But on its own, I can't see a damn thing here. Also, service companies tend to have higher net margins than companies that are more industrial. For example, in the oil industry, a 1 penny net margin on every dollar of sales is actually surprisingly good. And that's because they have billions and billions and billions of dollars flowing in. So even with a net margin of a penny per dollar, the shareholders are doing fine in a company like that. The other thing you look for is growth of net margin. And in this case, I see very modest growth. It's not spectacular growth of the net margin. So no, this is not a company that's wow. Look at that net margin go up every year. No, it looks like it's stable. It's a stable. And then those were the profitability ratios. Then you can go down, and the next one, well, okay, return ROE. Yeah, return on equity. We can do ROE. That's, I don't know why I put it in profit. Yeah, I guess it is. Okay, equals the net income of the company. Divided by, now we have to go over to the balance sheet and find the stupid stockholders' equity. Really? There it is. No. Did I screw something up there? Oh, I was just testing you on that to see if you would catch that. Okay. No, that can't possibly. That's 600%. Okay. Okay, by the way, all of these are percentages. The ones that I've shown you so far, you would turn these, when you format them, you would format them to be percentages. There are a few of them that aren't percentages. They're actually multiplication factors. But in this case, equals. So let me do that again. Will you get off me? Let me find it myself. Net earnings, right? Equals that divided by, and then we'll pull this. I have, really? Well, that's pretty good. A 25% return? That's decent. Return on equity there. I mean, that doesn't suck at all. And let's see how it was the year previous. Yeah, actually, you know, this is what I'm seeing here. Do you see why this company's got a beta that's below one? Do you see the stability of the ratios? This is the kind of investment that you would put into a, not necessarily a defensive, but a responsible portfolio for someone in the 30s or 40s, a family or an investor. And this is what, there's nothing really wrong with this whole sheet. It looks good. So far. Now, what I'm going to do is on Monday, we'll finish this up. You notice that I actually extended your homework deadlines on several so that you've got more time because we are behind because we lost that day. So on Monday, I'll clean up chapter 4 and maybe move on. But that's all I have for you today. I thank you.